I'm Tom Haley, and this is the Bluegrass Region Voices and Views podcast. Here we discover interesting people, places, and activities around the Bluegrass region of Kentucky. The first series of episodes will feature storytellers who live in this region or live in the surrounding counties and come here to participate in storytelling events. My first guest is Jerry Young. We'll take a trip down memory lane and holler up the house. I met Jerry in 1979, and we've maintained our friendship these 41 years. Jerry is a member of the Kentucky Storytellers Association, and he is co-chair of the Wandering Storytellers. They meet on the third Monday of each month from 7 to 8:45 p.m. at the Joseph Beth Booksellers in Lexington Green in the conference room off of the Bronte Bistro. They allowed us to use that room to record this conversation. So you will hear a little bit of restaurant sounds. Jerry and I had lunch there and then began our recording session. By the way, I had a crab cake sandwich and fries from the bistro. There were two large, perfect crab cakes on a brioche bun and fries that were so good, I can't describe them. They did some kind of magic to them. Recently, Joseph Beth has undergone a major, beautiful remodel. They're so much more than a bookstore. It's a relaxing place for a coffee break or a delicious and reasonably priced meal or to attend unique events. And parking at Lexington Green is free and easy. I encourage you to check it out. Let's jump into this conversation with Jerry about storytelling.
Well, first of all, being your friend for all these years has been one of the easiest things I've ever done. And you're the kind of person who doesn't put the arm on someone for not staying in contact. Because there have been times when we've gone several months or maybe even a year without talking. But each time we get back together and talk, it's like yesterday was the last time we talked. So I really appreciate that kind of friendship. So thank you for that. And what a little bit about me, I don't know. I guess I grew up normally like most kids do, in and out of things. And I went to the Navy when I was 17. Lost my sight when I was 25 in an automobile accident and had a 5-year struggle getting used to that. And then I determined during that time that I would make another go at it because I had to live my life and had to be something or somebody. So I got up and took another run at it. That's what I've been doing, and during the time that after I lost my sight, I moved from Louisville to Lexington here and to go to college and got a couple of degrees from University of Kentucky, and I've been involved in street rodding and ham radio and a whole bunch of different things, and Toastmasters for years and years. I've been in Toastmasters 52 years, be 53 years in March, so it's almost 53 years, and then I got into storytelling, and it's interesting that you asked that question because I tell people I've been storytelling all my life. When I was a kid, I used to get beat for telling stories. Now I get paid occasionally to tell a story, and that's a lot of fun. But I find it interesting that you asked because actually you're the one that got me into storytelling professionally. I don't know if you remember, and I'm not sure about the year. I think maybe it was around 1980 or something like that. They had a storytelling contest here in Lexington, and the prize for the contest winner would be a ticket to a Garrison Keillor concert.
I do remember that, yeah.
And you called me up and asked me if I wanted to be involved in it. I said, well, yeah, I never have done anything like that before, but yeah. And the requirements was you had to tell a story 8 minutes or less, and it had to be a story about a personal activity or personal event. And so I told a true story about a hunting trip, and I went on with my father-in-law. And of 13 storytellers, 9 of them were professional tellers. I came in fourth. I was really proud of that. And I questioned the judges afterwards about what I could have done differently. And I broke a cardinal rule of Toastmasters by not going out to Joseph Beth Booksellers, incidentally, is where it was, and not surveying the area that I would be telling stories in and what the layout was like. And so I did not know when I got there that I would be standing at the top of three steps on a little stage, and that I could take the mic off the stand and walk down the steps and get closer to the audience. And the judges told me, had I done that, then I would have rated higher in the storytelling, because they had me first up until toward the end, and they had to look for stuff to add to or take away from the score, and because I wasn't able to get closer to the audience and make contact with the audience, and I was debited a few points, and that caused me to come in fourth. But otherwise, I would have come in with a higher rating than fourth. And of course, I learned a very important lesson then, because follow the rules that you know and do what you know you're supposed to be doing to be successful. But at any rate, that's how I got started in storytelling. Then I joined Kentucky Storytelling Association later on, told stories around different places. And in Toastmasters, I tell stories, because it's very important in communication to illustrate the point that you're trying to make with a story often. And people will remember the point that you're trying to make much longer and much better if you tell a story illustrating that point. And so I've used storytelling in Toastmasters a lot. And then once I got into KSA, I became an active regular storyteller. And now I'm co-chair for the Wandering Storytellers, which schedules featured storytellers for our monthly storytelling event, which meets here at Joseph Beth Booksellers on the third Monday night of each month. And January a year ago, I started something that some people might refer to as a mission. I don't think of it that way, but nevertheless, I started with got together a group of volunteers, and we now go around to nursing homes and senior citizens homes. I do the scheduling of the dates and times for that, and I go with volunteers, and we usually have two or three volunteers going to each home on each scheduled event and tell stories for an hour to the residents. And that's a lot of fun. I really get a lot of enjoyment out of that, because the residents enjoy it. And sometimes we have a small group that's not very much involved with the stories. And then other times we have a large group, like we went to the Harbor House in Louisville one time, a couple of us did, and we had a group of 35 people. And they were really active. They were into the stories, laughing, cutting up and asking questions, making comments, which is all very good, and it all adds to the stories. And right now I have about two dozen stories in my repertoire that I choose from, and I try to make a variety of them so I don't tell the same story at the same place too many times. And I'm always adding to that story. A lot of my stories are personal stories about personal events that happened in my life. Some of my stories are stories that I've gotten from other places. Some of them I don't even remember where I heard them, but I've gotten them from other places. I've made up a few stories based on questions I've been asking, different things. So it's just a variety of different stories that I have to tell. Of course, I tell everybody that all my stories are true, except the parts I make up.
That pretty well sums you up. Everything's true except what you make up. I really do clearly remember that competition. It, as you said, it was here at Joseph Beth. And by the way, we are recording this podcast episode at the Joseph Beth Bookstore here at Lexington Green in Lexington, Kentucky. They're kind enough to let us be in their space as we do this recording. And I thank you. I appreciate you making that arrangement. But yeah, the Garrison Keillor attending a concert a show that he was doing at the Singletary Center, I think it was, here in Lexington. And both of us were Garrison Keillor fans at that time, I know. And do you recall the story that you told? And would you be able to sort of give us an outline of what that story was?
I called it The Ritual, but it was a story about my father-in-law. At that time, I lived in Muldrow, Kentucky. We used to get up in rabbit season about 5 o'clock in the morning. And he had five or six or seven, I don't remember the exact number, of hunting dogs. And we'd pick out two or three hunting dogs and take them with us and go down to a little town called Rhineyville, Kentucky, and to a farm down there where the farmer used to let us go out and hunt on his land. And we'd go down there and go hunting. And it was funny. There's some things like, you know, one of the things that you have to know if you live in the country, if you don't, you need to know this. But you never drive upon a man's farm and jump out and run up to the house, because in the country they have dogs that guard the place, and if you do that, the dogs might get you or the farmer might shoot you. So what you do is you holler up the house, they call it, pull up in front of the house there and open, roll down the car window and holler, "Hello, the house," and you wait. And they'll come out and greet you and tell you when it's time to get out of the car and come on in, but you don't get out of the car until you're invited to do so. And we did that, and then it's all about the hunting trip, and so essentially what happened. But the reason I call it ritual, because every time we went down there to hunt, which were several times, you went through pretty much the same ritual to get to go hunting, and we knew we were going to get to go hunting, and the old man on the farm knew it, but we had to go through this little ritual, a bonding kind of thing that we had to go through with to get to go hunting. And so I called it the ritual because we always did pretty much the same thing, which incidentally included a half pint of whiskey. I'd give it to the old guy, and he'd cough a little bit, and I'd tell him I had something for his cough, and I'd get this out, and we'd all take a little sip. My father-in-law didn't drink anything, but he'd pretend to take a sip, and I'd take a sip, and the old man would take a sip. And he'd tell us, now, don't say anything to his wife about it. She didn't understand like that. The only reason he took that stuff was for medical purposes, and she just didn't understand it, so we wasn't to say anything about it to his wife, and we promised not to. And that happened every time. Every time we went down, same stuff, right, over and over again, pretty much the same thing. He raised chickens, had several brooder houses and raised chickens and collected eggs and sold them to the local stores, the schools and stuff around there. And so we'd always check on how his chickens and eggs doing and all that stuff, you know. But the bottle of whiskey, and after we took a sip, he'd offer it back, and I'd tell him, "No, you keep it, because your cold seems like it's getting to you a little bit, and you might need another little sip now and then to kind of soothe your throat." And so he'd say, "Thank you so much." And I don't know how many of you listening to this will know or remember or even old enough to, but back years ago, in the 1940s and 50s, there was a comic in the paper called Dick Tracy. And Dick Tracy's been around for a long time, and I don't know if it still is, but there was an old guy in Dick Tracy called B.O. Plenty. B.O. Plenty always had old gray hair straggly sticking out from underneath the baseball cap, and he had an Adam's apple go up and down like a yo-yo. Well, this old farmer looked just like old B.O. Plenty.
That's B.O.?
Yeah, like bad odor or something like that. Anyway, he looked just like old B.O. Plenty. It was so funny, But that was a story that I told. It had to be less than 8 minutes, and I think I'd probably 7.5 minutes or something long. But the key to telling it, to being a good storyteller, and incidentally, I think there are no such thing as a bad storyteller. There are good storytellers and there are better storytellers, but there's really no such thing as a bad storyteller. And in order to be a good storyteller, one has to be expressive and paint word pictures. And so, as I told my story, I talked about it was wintertime when we went hunting, so I talked about the trees standing out there with no leaves on, all the branches and arms sticking up in the air like a skeleton. Gave you a picture of bony arms sticking up in the air and just things like that. And then a rabbit we were trying to get was running in out of a big brush pile, and I talked about that. So you got to paint word pictures too, and be expressive to get the audience that's listening to you in their story with you. And so that was part of the reason I guess I did so well, because I did a pretty good job of painting the word pictures.
Wasn't KET involved with that? Were they the co-sponsor or something?
Yeah, KET was, right.
Because I actually do have a VHS tape where they played those stories on local television, and I recorded them off onto a VHS tape, which is somewhere in my basement. I don't know exactly where, but I have to dig that up sometime. We'll review those.
Yeah.
So I know that a lot of storytellers have what they think of as a signature story, a story that they're sort of known for and that they tell on a frequent basis. Do you have a story like that?
Well, as I said before, a lot of my stories are about personal events and personal activities. And I think the what I would call my signature story is one that I'm known for. I've told it several times in Toastmasters and around different places. And it's about my first bicycle and all that I went through with getting my first bicycle.
Well, if that's less than an hour long, would you tell it?
Yeah, it's less than an hour long. And so I'll tell it. I walked into my grandfather's office when he was keeping his books from the farm, busy at his table, and I stood there and waited patiently. He finally put his pencil down and turned to me and said, "What do you want, son?" I was living with my grandparents at that time. I said, "Grandpa, can I have a dollar and a half?" And he said, "What do you need a dollar and a half for?" I said, "I want to buy myself a bicycle." He said, "Well, son, I wish I had the money to give you, but we just don't have any extra money." I said, "Well, okay, but can I use the lawnmower?" He said, "Well, yes, you can use the lawnmower. Just be careful. Don't get hurt. I said, "I'm going to go cut some grass and earn some money to buy this bicycle." You see, I had found a bicycle in a barn at a neighboring farm. It's flat tires, rusty and all that, but it had a lot of potential, and I wanted to buy it. The guy wanted a dollar and a half for it. Now, you say that's no money, but 1947, to a kid, a dollar and a half was lots of money. So I took this old rotary lawnmower, which was almost too big for me to use at the time, and cut grass for 10, 15, 20 cents a yard until I got $2 saved up. And then I took the money, went over to the farmer's house, knocked on the door when he came out. I got my money out and held it cupped in both hands and said, "I came to get the bicycle. Here, take how much money you need." So the old farmer rooted through the money and took a dollar and a half. He says, "Okay, son, thank you. You go get the bicycle." So I went and got the bicycle. It was way too big for me to ride at the time, and besides that, it had flat tires, and I couldn't ride it anyway. So I pushed it home, put the kickstand down, ran in the house, hollered, "Grandpa, Grandpa, Grandpa, come here, look what I got, look what I got." My grandfather came out there, and I was standing there, my chest stuck out. I was so proud of that bicycle. He looked at it and scratched his head a little bit and said, "Looks like it needs a little work. It's a little rusty and tore up, isn't it?" I said, "Yes, sir. But I'll get it fixed up, I'll get it straightened out." So for the next 2 or 3 weeks, I spent time sanding on it and painting the fenders and painting the frame and everything, and shining the wheels, getting all the rust off the wheels and shining them all up and aired the tires up. Took some tape and wrapped it around the tore up seat and got it all ready. Well, I took it over on the lane behind the farm, which was, about 300 yards or so back of the farm. There was a lane called Bluebird Lane. I took it over there with my sister, and I told my sister, "Hold it up now, let me get up on it." She did, and it was slightly inclined. The road was declined and went downhill, and so she gave me a big shove, and down the hill I went, my feet just flying on those pedals and the wind blowing through my hair, and I was just having a big time because I was on that bicycle. Well, it came time to get to the bottom. With the coaster brake, you stood up on the pedal on backwards, and that's supposed to stop it. Well, when I stood up on the pedals didn't stop. They kept turning. It catapulted me over the handlebars into the ditch. The bicycle came right in on top of me, and I was in a briar patch. And my sister came running down the road hollering, Jerry, are you hurt? Are you hurt?" I came out of the ditch and drug the bicycle out. I said, "No, I'm not hurt. I'm scratched up a little bit, but I'm not hurt." And I went home, took the bicycle apart, took the back wheel off. And the next day, my sister and I walked the 2 miles over to J-Town where I was living and took it to the hardware store and asked them if they could fix it. They said, yes, they could fix it. It'd take a little while, but they could fix it. So I went out in the front of the store to look around and see what they had. Well, I had not been in that store very often, but boy, were there stuff out there. There was all kinds of stuff. There was feed and seeds and plows and buckets and chicken feeders and all kinds of stuff. Just everything you could think of out there. It was kind of a general store. And I was just walking around like a kid in a candy shop. My eyes were real big. I was just amazed at all the stuff I was seeing around on the shelves. And then I saw it. There it was on the shelf right in front of me in a box. I just had to have it. It was a chrome cap pistol shaped like an Army 45. I just had to have that. So I took it over to the counter, put it up on the counter, said, how much is this? The guy said, 50 cents. I pulled my money out of my pocket. It's exactly the amount that I had. So I took it, headed back to the back where the shop was, thinking, now I'm going to be a G-man. I'm going to catch all the criminals and send them to prison. I'm going to stop crime. I'll be a crime fighter with my new pistol. I got back here in the back. Guy said, your wheel's ready. I said, okay. He said, that'll be 50 cents. I said, what? That'll be 50 cents. I didn't have 50 cents. I just spent it. I turned to my sister. I said, Billy, give him 50 cents. She jammed her hands down in the pockets of that little sundress she had on, looked at me with those blue eyes, cold as steel, icy cold blue eyes, and she said, I ain't a-paying for your wheel. You got money. You pay for it. I said, but I just spent it on this cap pistol. Too bad. You'll just have to leave it here until you can go cut some more grass and earn some more money. I said, wait a minute. I went back out to the front of the store, and I walked around and walked around. Finally, the guy at the counter, the clerk, said, can I help you, son? I walked over there, put the pistol up on the counter, and I said, could I get my money back, please? Could I? He pointed the sign up on the wall, said, no return, no refunds. He said, I got to, you see the sign, don't you? I said, yes, sir, but my wheel, you know, I got it. He said, well, I guess he took pity on me because he said, well, you haven't fired any caps in this gun, and it's still like brand new, so I guess I can give your money back. So he gave me my money back, and I went back and paid for my wheel. Walked it home like I walked over with my sister, mad enough to bite railroad spikes in two. I was so mad at my sister over that deal, I just couldn't stand it. I got home, put my bicycle back together, and learned to ride it. And I'll tell you one thing, in the long run, I got even with my sister. I would never let her ride that bicycle, ever.
Never did.
Never did.
And are you all on speaking terms today?
Well, she's passed away, but yeah, she and I were very close. Even after that, it was just one of those little sibling things that goes on. But we were very close for years and years and years after that.
Did you ever go back and get that cap pistol?
No, I never did go back and get the pistol. I was too mad to think about that. But I enjoyed that bicycle for a long time.
Well, tell us about Wandering Storytellers.
Wandering Storytellers is a group, a subdivision, I guess you might call it, of the Kentucky Storytelling Association. And the Wandering Storytellers has a meeting here at Joseph Beth the third Monday night of each month, and we have a different featured storyteller. And the featured teller will tell stories for a total of 35, 40 minutes out of the hour and a half or 2 hours that we have, and then we have open mic for anybody who comes to the storytelling to see it. There's no charge for it. We ask for a $5 donation to support KSA, but you're not required to give anything. But if you're a member of the audience and during open mic, if you have a story you want to tell, you can get up and tell your stories. And sometimes we have several storytellers and sometimes we don't have any. And I'm always prepared to tell a story too in case there's slim pickings, in case not very many people want to tell. We have some time, I will fill in and tell some stories. But for the most part, I'd rather sit back and let the visitors, the people in the audience, tell stories if they have them, because that's how we get people involved in storytelling. So, and I have told stories. I've been to KS, been to Wilmore to a storytelling conference. I came in second in the Story Slam, and Story Slam is a storytelling event where you tell a 5-minute story. It's 5 minutes or less, and then you get voted on, and I came in on that down there a couple of times, and I've been to Cave Run Storytelling at Cave Run Lake a couple of different times, and other events around, and as a Wandering Storyteller, we all get together and tell stories and from time to time. And then last year, December a year ago, one of my friends and Toastmasters asked me if I would go to a nursing home and tell stories where his mother and father were in a senior home, rather. And I said, yeah, I'd be happy to. So I went out there to Morning Point's senior home out off Richmond Road and told stories, and that kind of got started. I, from there, recruited a group of storytellers. I think we got 6 or 8 storytellers that are volunteers, and I scheduled with the senior citizen home and nursing homes and Thompson Hood Veterans Home around Fayette County around here each year. And we do 2 or 3 or 4 times a month, depending, at different places, and we go out and tell stories to the residents there. Tell for an hour, and that's all they tell us at the residents. You will get tired after an hour, and so we don't go any longer than an hour. We tell some stories to entertain the residents in these homes, and they certainly enjoy it, and I enjoy doing it myself. Have lots of fun, and if any of you listening to this wants to be involved in that, all you need to do is come out to the third Monday night of the month and meet me and tell me, and we'll get you involved in it. And incidentally, some people say they can't tell stories. Some people say they don't have any stories. Everybody has a story of some kind. And everybody can tell stories. There are no bad storytellers, in my opinion. There are good storytellers, and there are better storytellers. But in my opinion, there's no such thing as a bad storyteller. And the reason I say that, because each storyteller has their own style, and they tell their kind of stories the way they want to tell them. And each storyteller adds something to the culture. We pass our heritage and our culture on from generation to generation through telling stories. When I tell stories about my childhood and things I did to people nowadays, a lot of them are younger people and millennials. They don't know anything about stuff that happened back in the 1940s and 50s. So by me telling stories, will give them some insight into the culture of the times and things that happened at those times and the way we lived at those times and the things that we did at those times. So that's why storytelling is so important, not only as a vehicle for entertaining, but a vehicle for passing on your culture and your heritage. And that's what we all do. And each of us have a different story to tell and a different way to tell it. And they're all good, and they're all entertaining.
Would you have any advice for someone who is wanting to put together and tell their first story? Anything about story structure? Or I know it's unique for each person, but are there any bits of advice that you might give?
Well, there's some storytelling steps you can do. It depends on what kind of story you want to tell. You know, there's a character and then a situation, conflict resolution, and in the end of it, and that's generally what the way the stories go. But all stories are not that way, in my opinion. And each person, if you're telling a story about something that happened to you when you were a child, you may just want to talk about it. Just sit down and talk about to the audience about things that happened to you when you were a child. And you could tell stories. Some of them are funny. Some of them are serious. Some of my stories I haven't told or may not ever tell or involve disciplinary actions that I had gotten when I was a kid and things that happened to me when I was a kid. But I would tell people, just be relaxed, talk to the audience like they were your friends, and tell them what happened to you, what you want them to know about you, and don't worry about it. Because, like I said, they're good storytellers and they're better storytellers. And we have storytellers who tell about their family life, where they lived, and the things they did when they grew up, and just all kinds of stuff. So my advice to you as a storyteller, paint word pictures, describe minimally. Don't go on ad nauseum about the things that happened, but minimally tell the stories and tell it, make them not too long, and just tell the details. Paint pictures like one of the stories that I made up, and I talk about a spring pond, and I describe the spring pond as a pristine pond with clear water. You could see the bottom of the pool, and you could see the crawfish on the bottom of the pool and the minnows swimming around in the pool with this water spider skittering about on top of the water, and the shade of a big oak tree over it. Those are pictures that you paint, and you can get the audience right there where you are with word pictures. So I would suggest to people, if you're going to be a storyteller, don't be afraid. Come on out and try and paint us some great pictures.
What length would you recommend for a first story that someone's working on telling in public for the first time?
Oh, 5 to 7 minutes. I would say 5 to 7 minutes would be a good time, good length of time. Now, if you get much shorter than 5 minutes, then you can't put in some of the details that you need to put in to make it a good story. If you go much over 7 minutes, unless it's a really interesting story or some kind of entertaining thing like we have some singing storytellers, and we have some storytellers who are musicians who play music and all that, and their stories go longer. But their stories are enhanced by the music and they play and what they do, and that doesn't bore the audience because it doesn't seem like it's as long as it is with music going on. For example, Ray Mendenhall plays a washboard, and there are not very many people know what a washboard is anymore, but he plays a washboard while he's telling his stories and sings along with them, and so his stories go on sometimes for 10 minutes. But they don't seem like they're that long. They're just really short stories. It seems like they're quick stories, and that's good. So I would suggest that 5 to 7 minutes with some kind of, if you can play music or something, that always enhances your stories.
Are they always what you would maybe say rated as clean or G-rated or?
Oh, well, here's my philosophy about that as coach here of the Wandering Storytellers. We are a family storytelling unit. We invite young teenagers or teenagers and young adults all to come. So we tell clean stories, and we don't tell scary stories. Although at Halloween sometimes some of them might get a little bit scary, but for the most part we don't tell scary stories. We certainly don't tell dirty stories of any kind, especially when we go to the nursing homes. We don't tell any off-color stories. That's just not my thing, and we just tell clean stories. We find out they're funny stories. They got trick endings sometimes. I got a story I tell about Christmas dinner. It's got a funny ending that you wouldn't expect, but they're all clean stories.
Give us some details about what time you meet.
Meet at 7 p.m. on the third Monday night of the month, and we meet until 8:45. The bookstore closes at 9, so we have to get out of there by 8:45. And that may not seem like much time, but it's plenty of time because we have anywhere from 5 or 6 or 7 people to 20 or so people come to our Wandering Storytellers events. And by the time you get to feature teller and you get 4 or 5 people from the audience want to tell stories and all, we have plenty of time. So we ask for a $5 donation, but you don't have to give it. It's purely a donation. It goes to support KSA. But if you don't have it and you don't feel like you want to give it, that's okay. We don't care.
And it's in the private room off of the dining room. And do people eat at the Wandering Storyteller meeting?
Yeah, some do and some don't. It's in the called the conference room off the bistro. And some people do and some don't. I usually always try to get something to drink because I usually eat before I come over here. But yeah, sometimes you can eat if you want, but if you don't, you don't have to. One other thing I want to say about storytelling. Now, storytelling is just that. It's telling. It's not story reading. Now, we've had folks come in and read their stories, and that's okay to a degree. But generally, someone reading a story, in my estimation, is not nearly as entertaining a person who tells a story because people who tell the stories are people who have experienced those things for the most part and have done those things for the most part, and they can put more feeling and more expression into it. And it's like with my stories. The ones I tell about the things I've done, I've lived those things, I've done those things, and so I can be more expressive and more descriptive. And you can tell easily a person who's reading a story and a person who is telling a story. So my advice to people who want to be storytellers, learn your stories. Don't memorize them and say them verbatim as you've written them, but memorize them and memorize the stories and tell them. Just tell them in the way you lived them and just tell them, and you'll do a much better job, in my opinion.
I remember when you and I were involved with, when I was involved with you with storytelling a few years ago, that one of the things that we encouraged for new storytellers who were working on their confidence and, you know, their technique was exactly what you just said, along with it being okay, though, to have a note card with a few bullet points on it if they were concerned that they might get off track. And they're just sort of practicing at our meeting so that they can go out into the community and do it. Is that still okay to
just have
a note card that you can glance at if you feel you need to?
Sure,
but not read it.
That's fine. Just kind of a little outline to keep you on track, and that's fine. If especially if you're working on a story and it's your first time or two for telling it, that's fine. But just to come in here, I do not encourage people just come in and open a book and read a story out of a book. That's
The Moth comes to mind. Have you ever been to any of the Moth meetings?
Over in Lowell?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been over several times. In fact, the first time I went there, I told a story, and I scored pretty high, but the problem that I had was they had some kind of little jingle bell thing that they would ring to tell you when your time was up, and the audience was laughing, clapping, making so much noise, I didn't hear the timer, so I went a minute overtime. So they took a couple of points off for me going overtime.
What is the length of a Moth talk to be?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay.
Yeah. And see, I asked them if they could make them ring it louder, and they said, no, they were recording all that stuff to play it on the radio, and they didn't want the noise in there, so they just had. And of course, I wear hearing aids, and I have trouble hearing anyway, so I never did even hear the bell. I went over time, but I've told stories there two or three different times at Louisville, and I haven't been in a while, but I have been there, and it's a lot of fun. And you hear some really good storytellers.
Now, those are to be true stories, aren't they?
Yeah. Can be. And I'll tell you something, after you've been in storytelling for a while, you go to a competition like the Moth, when you listen to storytellers, you know who wins before they ever tell you. Because the way they tell their stories and what they do and how they do it, you know who the winners are.
What would you say are some of the traits that make them a winner?
Well, it's just telling your story, being involved. It's a personal story, and you're involved in it, being expressive, and sometimes including the whoever's, if you got some people in the audience, mentioning them and including them in the audience, and telling a story that the audience can relate to. And that's what I find that most people have done. They've told stories that the audience could relate to it and feel like they were a part of it. And that's always a winning ploy to use in any storytelling, is when you make the audience feel like they're a part of your story.
Great. Was there anything else that you can think of that you would like to tell about storytelling before we wrap up?
We just have a variety of storytellers of all kinds, and as the co-chair for the Wandering Storytellers event, I make a point to try to make the featured storytellers a variety of people. For example, this year in August, I have a featured storyteller who's from India. He'll be telling some stories based on Indian culture, which I find very entertaining. And I've been to some storytelling events where we've had storytellers from other countries, and it's interesting to hear them tell the stories that are very similar to stories that we tell here, that have their characters' names and characters and their cultural events involved in it, which you can recognize the story, but it makes it an altogether different and beautiful experience to hear it as they tell it from their perspective. And so that's what I do. And so just don't be afraid to come out and tell your story, because like I said, no bad storyteller, and actually there are no wrong stories. We discourage dirty stories, as I've said earlier, that we just don't want to do that because it's a family setting. But come out and tell your story, because each of you have a story to tell, and we'd like to hear it.
Jerry, thank you so much for being a part of my story for over 41 years now, and let's keep that story going.
Okay.
Thank you, Jerry.
My pleasure.
Well, that's a little bit from storyteller Jerry Young. You can contact him by email at jbyoung8@windstream.net. Finally, if you like a call to action at the end of a podcast, maybe the following three will work for you. One, attend a session of the Wandering Storytellers at Joseph Beth Booksellers. Two, enjoy a meal at the Bronte Bistro at Joseph Beth. And three, subscribe to Bluegrass Region Voices and Views with your podcast app. My next guest will be storyteller Octavia Sexton. Watch for that episode to be posted on February 22nd. Until then, let's enjoy life, bluegrass life.